the basement, no longer alone, with my homegirl Therese on the microphone. Music politics are just chatting it up. Brunch in the basement, see that's what's up. You never know who might run through. Legendary artists or someone brand new. You miss a lot when you miss one day. At least that's what I heard somebody say. But it doesn't really matter what whoever says. It's always a good show with Javon and Therese. Yeah. Brunch in the basement with Javon and Therese. Yeah. Let's see who we got today or what we doing today or whatever it is, it's going to be good. Woo!
I read about her and this is what I found out. Dr. Cheryl L. Thomas is board certified. Everybody is frozen right now, but that's okay. She's board certified in internal medicine. She attended SUNY Downstate Medical School and completed her residency training at Montefiore Medical Center. You know, I'm from the Bronx, so that meant something to me.
Okay.
She has a degree of master's in business administration, so that tells me a whole other thing, or, you know, that she's diverse. She is affiliated with some of the best hospitals in Central Jersey, including Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital, St. Peter's University Hospital, and the University Medical Center of Princeton of Plainsboro. She strives to provide the highest standard of compassionate quality care to her patients. We're still all frozen on my screen. Are you frozen, Rez?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
On the comments? Yes, it's not moving.
Okay. And with years of experience practicing medicine, she is renowned for her attention to detail and skill in prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of a wide variety of conditions and disorders. It is her goal to promote a healthy lifestyle and empower patients where possible, positively impact their health by mindful choices and practices. And I can say for certain that this is true of her. And I don't take us a minute to get you, Dr. Thomas. Hope she can still hear me. So that is Dr. Thomas. Oh, we're catching up now.
Javon?
Yes. Can you see me? Can you hear me? Okay.
You take it day by day.
All right. Yeah, day by day is the best we can all do. You know, and when Javon was reading some of your bio, that you did some work at Downstate Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's where I graduated.
Ah, yeah, I'm very familiar with Downstate Hospital. When I was working, I can't say where, but we referred a lot of people over to Downstate Hospital in Brooklyn, a teaching hospital, so, yeah.
Yeah, there in Kings County.
Yeah, yep, definitely.
And with all of that, I'm proud to present to you my PCP, Dr. Cheryl Thomas.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for having me.
You know, and I don't know what I would do without you, Therese. You see how that works. See? Oh, thank you for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure. What is the format that you'd like to do?
So, I guess if it's okay with you, I'd like to just jump right in and discuss what you know about the virus and how the virus is impacting our community, and anything that you think is important for us and our audience to know. And then we can see if people might have questions or comments.
And I'll start, first of all, by thanking you for having me and giving me access to this forum. I'd also like to take this time as a healthcare provider to thank other first-line workers, including postal workers, store clerks, teachers, police officers, fire people, everybody else that's holding it up to try to get us through this time, in addition to the scientists that are working tirelessly to try to find a vaccine and medication. Just to give you a brief history about COVID, and some of this I'm going to breeze through because I'm going to assume that you guys know a lot of this, but it was COVID-19 is the name of the disease that's caused by the coronavirus, and the coronavirus is the SARS-CoV-2. So when you see that, it's not the same as the SARS virus as we saw before, but it is genetically linked. And the disease that is called COVID-19, and it's derived from coronavirus disease from 2019, which is when it was first identified. It was first seen in Wuhan, China, China first notified the WHO the end of December. The reason I'm making that distinction is because we don't know when the disease occurred. We only know when China notified the WHO. Okay, and that's important, I think, in terms of its transmission and why it was able to get as far as it did. Not to spend a lot of time on China, but I just think it's important to know that we knew about it December 31st when they notified the WHO, but nobody knows when it really started. There was a young doctor, his first name was Dr. Lee, who did notify the government of seeing a strange pneumonia evident in a Wuhan fish market. It's a wholesale fish market that also had live animals. COVID virus is a novel virus. In the past, it was really seen in bats, not in human beings. So the question again is also, how did it get to human beings? The only thing we know is that the disease was first seen at that market in China. The first case in the United States was in January, and that was in Washington State, and that happened to be a person who had recently traveled to Wuhan. The virus is transmitted by aerosol particles. For instance, if somebody sneezes, coughs, saliva, that's how the virus is transmitted. One thing that your viewers may not be aware of is the virus can live outside of the human host, meaning that if a person coughs, the virus can be alive for 2 to 3 hours. And on some surfaces, it can last as long as 4 days. That's not to scare people, it's to let them know that it can be there, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's infectious. My point with saying that is make sure you're wiping down surfaces, alcohol-based or diluted bleach. Wash your hands as you see that often. It's very important to wash your hands, wipe down surfaces that include doorknobs, kitchen counters, in the bathroom, the faucets, etc. As you know from the news, they often advocate the 6-foot distance. And the reason for that is the particles don't tend to travel beyond 6 feet. That's the logic behind that. And if you don't know what 6 feet is, a useful gauge is 2 arms lengths from someone. You had mentioned, that's a brief history of COVID. When they say it's a novel virus, what that means is human beings did not have immunity to it. And that's across the board globally. That's because we had not encountered it as an infectious agent within the human population. So as a novel virus, everybody started on an even playing field, meaning nobody had seen it. So I'm mentioning that because I'm going to get back to that once we get to the disparities in who's getting it and who's dying from it. I want to start by doing a little bit of the COVID stats. Did somebody say something? I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. The vast majority of people who get COVID don't die from it. I want to start with that. Globally, 6% of the people that contracted died from it. In New York City, it's 7%. And the state of New Jersey, the statistics is about 4%. Those are people who contract it that die from it. The death rates increase depending on your age. If you're over 60, if you have a history of asthma, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, COPD, which is emphysema or bronchitis, if you have cancer or are getting chemotherapy, i.e. Altered immune system, or if you have chronic kidney disease, for instance, people on dialysis. Those people have increased death risk. Now, I would like to drill down a little bit more on the numbers of people who are contracting it, as well as people who are dying from it. Again, remember at the beginning, everybody level playing field, nobody was immune. So in New York City, African-Americans comprise 22% of the population, yet they represent 28% of the deaths. Latinos comprise 29% of the population, yet they represent 34% of the deaths. In Queens, they have the greatest number in New York City. However, the greatest number of deaths in New York City is in the Bronx. To just use some other states, Illinois, African Americans comprise 14% of the population, yet they represent 28% of the disease and 43% of the deaths. That's Illinois. And Louisiana, Blacks represent 33% of the population, yet comprise 70% of the deaths. In Arizona, this is not just limited to African Americans and Latinos in terms of the death rates and incidents. In Arizona, Native Americans comprise less than 6% of the population, yet they have 16% of the disease. So that tells you again the disparities regarding the population, the disease incidence, as well as the deaths from the disease. In contrast, which I find really interesting, and hopefully with your views we can discuss it, Oregon and Minnesota, the incidence of disease is proportional to the population in terms of African Americans. So why is it that in heavily populated area, again, a novel virus, everybody starting on a level playing field in terms of immune system, that you have an increased risk of incidence and deaths in heavily populated areas with Latinos, African Americans? It's not the same in terms of heavily populated, but they're isolated in terms of Native Americans in Arizona. That's the question. Now, one reason, and it's to me, it's a simplistic reason, though it's true, it's, you say true to it, but also simplistic, is that the increased deaths stem from the fact that they have increased risk factors. There's greater diabetes, hypertension, asthma, and COPD in minority communities, which then begs the question, why is that the case, and what can be done about that? But to me, that's a very simplistic answer to this. I think we need to look deeper. For instance, in New York City, think about the type of work people do and the way that they have to get to the work, the transit system, buses. People are exposed. People of color, they can't work from home. A lot of them have to go to work. There's no such thing as working from home on the computer. A lot of them are essential workers, transit workers, grocery store clerks, maintenance people. In the Bronx, the majority of the maintenance people are Latino. And those are people who may still be going to work and still being exposed. Healthcare aides, childcare workers, again, people who can't work from home, they're out in the community, taking public transportation and being exposed. Also in the community, it's just more likely to be existing health concerns, which we detailed earlier with the diabetes, the asthma, the COPD. People are less likely to be insured, which is very relevant when you consider, if you even look at the Obama healthcare plan, how our current government refused to extension for enrollment and has been doing different things to destroy the system. People without insurance are less likely to go to the doctor, and they're also less likely to have the PCP. So these people wind up in the emergency room. And guess what's in the emergency room? COVID-19. So that's, again, you have the exposure. There may be a racial bias that prevents proper treatment and testing. And conversely, in our communities, there's a lack of trust where people may not seek testing. the rates that they should for the animals. They can ride it out at home without really being tested and without being properly quarantined or the social distance from their loved ones. At city hospitals versus private hospitals, the supplies, the access. People of low income, they tend to go primarily to city hospitals. Look historically, redlining, which has existed since the 1930s. And what does that do? People of color in segregated neighborhoods, unstable housing, grocery stores don't have healthy choices or affordable foods that are choices. The other thing which I learned recently, which to me it was very striking, is a term called weathering. Are you guys familiar with that?
No. Weathering? No.
Yeah. And what it referred to is accelerated aging due to stressors, exposure to toxins, lack of sleep, and racial discrimination. It's like premature aging of a population. And again, when you look at the risk for COVID, one of the risks is advanced age. Now, it can be chronological age, but it could also be the weathering due to the things that I just mentioned. So those are things that I think impact why we're seeing it more particularly in the Northeast. But I don't want to just leave it at why. What can we do about it as a community? One, which most of us know about, is the social distancing. When you see people, if you know them and they're not doing it, just gently remind them. I don't think it's a matter of people not. Okay, some individuals may not take it seriously, but I think as a group collectively, most of us take this very seriously. Mm-hmm. So there may be some individuals that need reminding about the social distancing as well as the mask. If you live in a place where you have to take an elevator, because not everybody lives in a walk-up, try to minimize your time in an elevator. Strategically plan your trips up and down, because as you know, the elevator is a very small area. You're not going to get 6 feet from somebody, particularly if it's crowded. And if you don't like the color, just put something over it that matches your top, but it protects you and it protects others. And just one other sidebar with the mask. When you remove a mask, put it on, don't touch the front of the mask. Because what you're doing, if you have been exposed, you just touched it and then you remove the mask, you touch the front, you touch other parts of your face. So you're potentially exposing yourself. So just be mindful, putting on, taking off a mask, do not touch the front. Mm-hmm. Touch the sides, okay? Also avoid touching your face or anyone else's faces before washing your hands. Don't share drinks or smokes. If you're a smoker or a drinker, this might be a good time for you to consider stopping. But if that's something that is not your interest, then be selfish and don't share it, because that is how it spread through the saliva. Also, taking care of management, your disease management. If you're diabetic, hypertensive, this is not the time to have the Snapple or the bag of chips. This is the time for you to really get your health in order. You know what you should be doing, and this isn't the time to play around, because as I mentioned, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, all those things increase your risk. So this is your opportunity to try to take control to mitigate your own risk or your family's risk. On a broader scope, do the census. The census is how the government allocates resources. Resource is important. And again, using COVID as an example, firehouses and schools. So if you get the census and you haven't done it, do that. I want to encourage people to vote for people who share their interests. Don't sit out this election. If you want health insurance, if you think health insurance is important for everybody, then vote. If you think not having insurance companies throw you off their rolls because of pre-existing conditions, then vote. And FYI, COVID-19 would now be considered a pre-existing condition. So I urge you, and also you want to vote for people who care, not only care about healthcare disparities, but also have an interest and the leadership capabilities to addressing the issues. Because a lot of things I brought out are speculation, but they haven't been studied. We need somebody that's interested in studying, not just for academic purposes, but toward doing something about what they find to try to improve the healthcare disparities. Because this isn't the first time this has happened. With H1N1, minority communities were affected disproportionately. Mm-hmm. So our job is to see that this doesn't happen again. And the final thing I was going to say that we can do, of course, the list can be longer, but for me, it's remember your community. Remember your abuela. Remember Nona. Remember Bubby. Remember Big Mama or Pop Top. Knock on a door. Call them. See how they're doing. At this point, we should all be our brother's keepers. Find out if somebody needs something that you can provide, and if so, do so. That doesn't mean they have to open a door. You can leave it at their door, but just check on your community. Mm-hmm. And finally, just love each other and as well as yourself, and take care and be safe.
Thank you. Thank you that so
was,
much. For
that was a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. That was you. I have some questions that I want to kind of field to you, if that's okay.
Sure.
How is this one from how is this vaccine for COVID going to be similar to that of HIV and AIDS or the information?
How the vaccine, is that was the question?
Yes. How the vaccine eventually when they do it, how is it going to be similar to that, meaning a viral suppressant, or what is it going to be like?
Well, it hasn't been, the vaccine hasn't been developed yet, so I don't think that's a question that can be answered, but I would imagine that their goal is to be able to suppress the virus. So, because right now, some people will have the virus and they develop immunity. You might have heard studies about convalescent plasma. That's mm-hmm. plasma or blood product from people who have had the virus, gotten better, donated their plasma, which has been used in a study purpose for people who are currently critically ill. What we don't know about people who have the antibodies is A, how long it will last, and B, whether or not it confers immunity short-term or long-term. Those are questions that have not been answered.
Okay. What advice can you give a senior that may have been diagnosed and treated for COVID? What can be some of the things that they can do to stay well or get better?
Okay, if I'm assuming that they've had it and that they're symptom-free, because whether they're better.
Were treated and released, maybe home now, recovering.
Okay, I would still tell them to be careful for the reason I stated before. We don't know if you can get it again.
Right.
They still want to be careful. My advice is universal precautions, which means they still maintain the 6 feet. They still wear the mask. They still are very compulsive about frequent hand washing.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to add that I do have a friend who says that she tested positive. She and her spouse, her mother-in-law lives in the home. The mother-in-law then got it. She got better, but then she got it again. So and that's the one person I know of who says that she got sick, she got better, she was ready to go back to work or whatever for like a week or two, and then she got sick again. So I don't know, but sounds like she...
Yeah, my question for her, because that could be too, either she got it again or she never really fully recovered from right. The other one. So the answer to that was she tested? And was she... Because to test to see if somebody's done it, it's two tests within 24 hours of each other to see if it's really eradicated. But even the testing is tricky, but I'm not going to go into that. Mm-hmm. But that could have been either scenario, what you just described.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And more rest?
People that are HIV positive are just one population of people that are compromised that can be affected, because you named a litany of other unfortunate underlying illnesses that could be connected to it as well, that could struggle
with
recovery.
I would be careful, but the thing with HIV, it's the spectrum, because some people have had HIV for 10 years, been on medication, and they have no viral loads and their T cell counts are normal.
Correct.
So I go back to, again, a universal precautions, because we don't know in that population whether they're at increased risk, possibly. Versus somebody who has HIV, is not treated, and still has viral load and low T cell counts, they absolutely would be at increased risk.
Right, right. Like other viruses, like the chickenpox, shingles, they lay dormant in the spine. They mm-hmm. never actually go away. Do you think, or is it still too early to tell whether or not this will be a virus? Because most viruses do stay in the central nervous system. Is it something that they will always test positive for, like tuberculosis, or is it something that you can test positive, negative? And
I don't think we know. And that goes back again, whether it will lay dormant. Because again, if you think about it, this virus came to human beings sometime in 2019. So we don't really have the data, the long data to really state whether or not it's something that would lay dormant.
Okay. Okay.
It really is an evolving picture. Every day, for instance, I even looked at statistics yesterday, and then I looked at statistics today, and they're changed.
Wow.
Yeah, and they've been mentioning on television, you know, the drugs that they're going to be studying for it. I think the Oval Office occupant had mentioned the hydrochloroquine and chloroquine as possible treatments, but those things have not been proven.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, there was a small study today from China that says it doesn't look like they're going to be effective. So mm-hmm. it's evolving science, but the key is data-driven science, not just speculation. That's what I would tell your viewers to hang their hat on,
mm-hmm.
not people's hunches, but you really want data-driven information.
Right. I have a concern that when they start doing clinical trials, what population they tend to reach out to, it appears, I'm trying to use my words carefully, but I'm just going to have to say it just to put it out there. It appears that, you know, where they want to start doing some testing and where they want to start using the vaccines are always in communities of color. And we haven't been very trustworthy, I mean, you know, trustful of the medical field based way back to Tuskegee and probably before that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that the case, in your opinion? Like, is there another way to do it?
To find out whether medications are efficacious or not, or vaccines?
Right.
To my knowledge, no, you need clinical trials.
Right.
Now, the areas that they would do the trials in, I would hope, would be diverse areas, but would tend to think it's going to be the areas where the disease is most prevalent.
Right.
In addition to, because you want, with those vaccines, you not only, just contrary, and I definitely understand what you're saying about the distrust. And
right.
Without even elaborating on that, I think most people of color would understand that. But you want, with most of these studies, a varied population, because something might work on one population that may not work on another, and you want to know that.
Right, right.
And it goes with gender too, male versus female. And I don't know if I mentioned this, but in China and Italy, as far as gender differences, males were more affected and had a higher death rate than females.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't comprised that data here in the States, but that's worth mentioning for the men that you see on the street that are not taking the social distances seriously. They might want to know that.
Right.
So Lois Thompson has a question, which is, whether or not the virus remains alive, I guess, for 4 days on all surfaces.
No, it's not all surfaces. The 4 days was seen on plastics. Cardboard was 24 hours. Aerosolized was 3 to 4 hours. But again, just because it's there doesn't mean that it's infectious. But just be aware to clean the surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
And our children, there was, at one point, there were people, I think I even was hopeful and believed at one point, very early on, that Black people didn't get it, and that died out really quickly. But then people...
I heard that. Where
yeah,
did you get that from? I was curious about that. How did you get that?
I don't recall. I probably heard it somewhere in passing. I was still going to work at the time in the office, and
mm-hmm.
I heard it somewhere. And... you know, then quickly I was like, okay, nah, that's not the truth. So people hear these things and then, you know, some people run with it. The other thing is that babies and young people don't get it, but
you know, that's not true, right?
Not true.
It's not
yeah.
true, but that's something
no,
that people need to hear from a doctor.
It's not true. Children get it, and children tend to get milder. However, some stats that I just looked at, a large percentage, I'd have to find a percentage, but a large percentage of people are currently hospitalized for it, meaning they're sick enough to be admitted, are between the ages of 20 and 54. So that means not only are these people getting it at younger, at those young ages, but they're also being hospitalized and they're also ending up in the ICU intubated. That's of the very sick. So young people can get it. And I think last week I heard of a baby that passed from it. But I don't know, again, whether the baby had any underlying issues that made it more susceptible.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, universal precautions. Everybody needs to be careful.
What do you think about that tiger that allegedly was tested positive? How do you think the tiger got?
Well, it's COVID virus is what's called a zoonosis, and that means that it's a type of virus that can be passed from human to animal. And
wow.
That goes back to, again, that it was initially found in bats. So somehow in China, it went from a bat to a human.
Mm.
And again, it was at that market. So I don't know if it has anything to do with, you know, maybe some contamination at the food there. I don't know. I don't know that anybody knows that, but it was initially from a bat to a human.
So does that mean if you've been diagnosed with COVID-19 and you are home isolating or quarantining and you have pets, could they be?
Yeah, if at all possible, you don't want to, if some people are into pets licking their face and stuff, you don't want that. You also, if somebody else can handle the pet, that, but if not, you handle it, but try to maintain a social distance with the pet as well. Now, I don't know of any pets dying from it, but I do know that pets can get it.
Wow. That's something they haven't spoken about up until the tiger was diagnosed.
Yeah, and that was in the Bronx.
Yeah,
the Bronx Zoo, and they're mm-hmm. testing the animals in the zoo, but not so much the people. So I want to say that people who are holding on at the podcast, people who have called in, if you want to speak, press 1 on your phone. The number to call in, by the way, and you are listening to WJBR Internet Radio in the basement with Javon and Therese, and tonight with Dr. Cheryl Thomas. Believe, and I'm going to take a chance here, the last 4 digits of your number are 1844. I believe you did press 1 at one point and then pressed it again.
Yeah,
what's
correct.
Your name and where you're calling from?
Roger Paris from Harlem.
How you doing, Mr. Paris?
Fine. How are you?
I'm great. Do you have a question, sir?
I do. How you doing, Cheryl?
Hey, Raj.
Okay. I think it'd be important for people to know how many times can the average person, not people who work in the health field, but the average person wear the mask and gloves?
Well, the real answer to that is it's supposed to be a one-time use. But given the environment and the fact that we don't have a lot of supply, then you use it till it falls apart. If you have 2, you put 1 on and then you put a second one over it. This is if you have so that you can at least protect the bottom one. But ideally, most of the PPE, personal protective equipment, in normal times, is one-time use and discard.
Okay, let's just gonna get this clear. So you're suggesting that people wear 2 masks if they have it?
If you have more than 1 mask, you put 1 underneath and then wear a second to protect it. Or use a scarf, a bandana. Something just to protect the 1 mask that you have to increase its durability and decrease the fact that it'll fall apart or if it's contaminated.
Okay.
So if you have the bandana over it, the bandana you can wash, but you still have your mask as the protection underneath it.
Okay. So how often can you use those masks? Not the bandana, but the mask. How often do you suggest that people use those masks? I mean, can they use it 4, 5, 6, 7 times?
You use it as long as you have it and it doesn't fall apart. But if you ask me medically and in a perfect scenario, I would tell you they're one-time use. But because the masks are limited, just use it until it falls apart.
I got you. Thank you.
Okay, have a good night.
And thank you so much for calling. And if you want to see Dr. Cheryl Thomas, you can go to YouTube and we have a live stream at WJBR Internet Radio, where you can see the 3 of us. But if you're comfortable hanging out on the phone, that's cool too. There's a really specific question by Janice Paez. She says, Dr. Cheryl, can you share what the virus looks like as it works through the body? I have an aunt that is on day 10, and she still feels very tired, gets winded easy, and can't take deep breaths.
How old is your aunt? I'm sorry, I'm going clinical. It depends on the individual, and it depends on their underlying health conditions. From what I've read, you can have symptoms for 3 to 4 weeks with COVID.
Mm.
What you want to do, hopefully, with your aunt is that you see gradually she's improving. But the other thing I will tell you is if she's having fever and her shortness of breath is getting worse, then she wants to see a healthcare professional. Because if it's getting worse, the one thing about COVID is it can change very quickly, meaning that a person can be have a sharp turn on a downward course. So you want to keep an eye. So if her shortness of breath worsens, don't wait too long. That's my point.
For people using PPE at home and they have limited resources, I heard you just say that they could get a bandana because you could actually wash those. You can wash those by hand and reuse them. Putting Purell on gloves helpful? How would they be able to preserve gloves? Or should they wear gloves and just wipe down the surfaces as you suggested?
Well, I would wear gloves, particularly, for instance, I'll use the elevator example again. You're going to push a button in an elevator. Unless you have some sandy wipe and you're going to wipe down that, you want to wear your gloves. Mm-hmm. In the supermarkets with the carts, you want to wear your gloves. Some mm-hmm. supermarkets have the sandy wipes, others don't. Mm-hmm. So you want to protect yourself that way. Does that answer your question? I'm sorry.
Is it effective, rather, to put Purell on gloves?
Yeah, I don't know that that's necessary. I would be more concerned with everything's in short supply. So if I had to pick, I want to put the Purell on my hands.
Gotcha.
Okay, let's take another call. 4915 are the last four digits of your number, and I need a new set of glasses. 4915. What's your name and where? Oh, gee, what did I do? 4915 are the last four digits of your number. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Fran. I'm calling from East Brunswick, New Jersey. Dr. Cheryl, I had a couple of questions. So I have a family member who didn't have symptoms too seriously, but tested positive after 17 days. And now she will not be tested until, I think, day 37 or 40, something like that. So I just wanted to know, when do you know, or is there any data out there on whether people who have had it still have, slight symptoms, but are they still contagious?
We don't know. If you look at the criteria, there's two ways in terms of releasing quarantine. One is the people who are tested, and the people who are tested should be without fever for 7 days, as well as without shortness of breath in that 7-day period, and test negative twice in a 24-hour period. Those are people who are tested. People who are not tested, the criteria is that they have 7 days post the onset of their symptoms, they are symptom-free, and that includes fever, cough, shortness of breath, and in 3 days, 7 days post the onset of their symptoms, and in 3 days having no symptoms, then they can release quarantine. As far as the person that you're saying, was she tested again?
Yes, and it came back positive after, I guess it was 21 days technically from when she first had symptoms.
Okay, and what we don't know about that is the test that they're doing, particularly nasal, is viral RNA, and it can still be detected. But what we don't know is if the level is low, where it's low where it can be detected, but is it too low where she's not infectious? And that we don't know, which means she has enough viral load there to be test positive, but she may not have enough viral load to be infectious. And we don't know the answer to that at this time.
Okay. A couple of other things. I did want to know, you know, some people I know have had, well, let me start with the first thing. Someone, a friend of ours in our neighborhood actually was saying that she had these symptoms from January and her doctor couldn't figure out what it was and just said it was a virus. Are those people who would qualify to be tested to see, you know, for antibodies whenever those tests come out?
Absolutely. Definitely. As a matter of fact, when they're talking about opening up the country, one of the key things that needs to be done is increased testing. So we know who's had it, who's recovered, where is the virus. So yeah, when antibodies become available, I would strongly urge that person to be tested.
Okay. And then I guess my last question is someone else who I know who had symptoms for, you know, not all the symptoms, but a few symptoms, low fever, you know, bad cough, yet their physician wouldn't give them a prescription to get tested. They gave them some antibiotics.
Yeah.
They had symptoms for a long time, but they like wouldn't give them a test, a prescription to get a test.
And that goes back to one of the points I was making in terms of the disparities in the disease, about the racial disparities. And again, I don't know the race of the person you're talking about, but assuming that some people aren't tested, and there's racial disparities regarding how doctors perceive them.
Interesting.
So that might be an example of that. And that person should definitely, are they still symptomatic?
I'm not sure.
Because
that
if they are,
like
some urgent care centers don't require a doctor's prescription. That person might try urgent care centers that does testing, because some of them will have you fill out an online questionnaire and then they'll bring you in for testing.
Okay, I'll pass that information.
Also, Rutgers has a new test out now, which that person may want to look into. It just came out. Actually, they just started using it today, where it tests for saliva, and you get an answer, I think, within 24 hours.
And you need a prescription for that, or
Rutgers University, and I know they were testing people in Edison today. So that person may want to look into that.
Okay, so is that at that testing center in Edison? There's like one large test.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that
exactly.
The one?
I think I saw they tested like 200, over 200 people today.
Okay.
And it's a new test for it. Because the old one
is
through the nose or the mouth. This is saliva. They hand you something, you give them a sample of saliva, you hand it back to them.
Okay. And do you need a prescription for that also? Or?
Because if it's in your spray, or, you know, like if they're saying sneezing, then saliva would have, in my
yeah.
opinion, I'm not a doctor, but you know.
No, the test didn't exist. It's something that they developed.
Mm.
But I have a feeling that if it works going forward, we're going to see a lot more use of it, because it's very easy. And if it's accurate and fast, that's what you want.
Yeah.
Right. And what one last
Thank
question
you,
was just around fruits and vegetables at the market. Can they be contaminated, or, you know, like if the virus is on them, you know, how do you deal with those?
Well, when you think about it, if somebody sneezes on it, that potential exists. I mean, everybody should be wearing a mask, but I would definitely, if you bring any fresh fruits or vegetables that a lot of public could have contacted, I would definitely wash them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Those were great
You're welcome.
Questions.
Have a good
Thank
night.
You so much for calling. Thank you. That was great.
You're welcome.
She was great.
Give the call-in number one more time, Jay.
Yeah. So you are listening to WJBR Internet Radio in the basement with Javon and Therese. And tonight, Dr. Cheryl Thomas. The number to call in is 347-996-5394. That's 347-996-5394. Someone, Lois, spoke about lung x-rays, which can show the proliferation of pneumonia. Not everyone who is positive develops pneumonia. Some people have been killed by blood clots as it affects the coagulation process. And someone wanted to know, how do you know whether or not you have pneumonia versus COVID if you are having problems breathing and fever and so forth and so on?
Well, there's two ways of diagnosing that. One would be by a chest x-ray and the other would be by a CAT scan.
What would be the difference in the X-ray?
X-ray is just radiologically, the X-ray is not as, you don't have the same resolution on an X-ray as you do with a CAT scan. A CAT scan, you can see more. But often with COVID, you can see findings on a chest X-ray. But if you have a strong suspicion and a chest X-ray is negative, then a CAT scan can sometimes show things that a chest X-ray doesn't. That just made me think, too, with COVID, just to go through the most common symptoms. The most common symptoms with COVID is a fever. 99% of people with COVID have a fever. The next common is fatigue. 70% of people with COVID have fatigue. The next is a dry cough. However, people can have a productive cough as well, but 59% with COVID have a dry cough. Some people complain of decreased appetite, muscle aches, and shortness of breath. The other things I want to make people aware of is that some people present with diarrhea and pink eye.
Mm.
So if you don't have some of the classic symptoms, but you know something weird's going on, don't dismiss it because it is possible. Mm-hmm. And that's not to make people scared. I'm hoping I'm not doing it. I just want to try to educate people.
I think that the people appreciate you coming on and helping. We have more people listening tonight than we normally do, and they all came out to listen to you, Doc. So you're doing a good thing for the community.
Thank you.
A great thing, because we need to be educated from someone we can trust.
And right. And more often now, getting a hold of a doctor who isn't tired or isn't on the front line is very, very hard. You have to wait, you know. Reasonably so, understandably so. It's just very, very hard. So thank you again for
coming.
You're
welcome.
Has anyone done a study the difference between the AIDS-related PCP pneumonia and this particular pneumonia? Are they similar?
Well, no, they're two totally different. The pneumonia that you get with COVID is a viral pneumonia. With AIDS, when people get pneumonia, it was typically other organisms. It wasn't the virus itself that caused it, if you understand the distinction.
Okay.
With COVID, it's a viral pneumonia, and when people get really sick, it's like a really bad inflammatory reaction to the virus.
Okay.
And that's why a lot of people end up on respirators. It's called ARDS or respiratory, I'm sorry. Just looking at that because I want to make sure I give you the correct term for this. But it used to be adult respiratory distress syndrome. It's a pneumonia that's characterized by a tremendous amount of inflammation.
Okay. And the PCP pneumonia that's AIDS related isn't
that
virus?
That's not virus. He was actually the organism. It wasn't HIV. If you think of HIV as the virus that decreased the immune system that allowed the PCP organism to take hold,
okay.
If you know what I mean, as opposed with COVID, it's the virus itself that's causing the inflammation.
Okay.
So you have one as a secondary effect. PCP occurred as a secondary effect to HIV that diminished your immune system, as opposed to COVID itself is causing the damage.
Gotcha.
The other thing that made me think of, too, is some people refer to COVID as similar to the flu, and it's not at all, not in terms of its contagiousness or its virulence. The flu, in general, kills about 1% of people infected. COVID has killed, as I was telling you, between 4 and 6%. And remember, COVID's only been here 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not the flu.
Yeah,
and that again is just to remind people to take it seriously and do the proper precautions.
So, Nina wanted to just mention that an 18 day old baby died in Hartford, Connecticut, and they say that baby tested positive for the virus. That's sad and a shame.
Yeah, very sad.
Yeah,
very sad.
What about, someone says, what about the use of PPE in the home when caring for a COVID-positive person and you have limited resources?
Well, if you have the mask, use the mask. You still want to do the social distancing, and that includes with your, if their utensils, their plates. You want to try to keep that stuff separate. Make sure you wash it. They want to kind of stay isolated in a home if that's possible until they're not symptomatic and not able to infect other people within the household.
Someone wants.
If you don't have a mask, again, use the bandana. Use what you have. But again, because it's cough aerosolized, you want to protect here. You don't want to touch your eyes, et cetera, because it can be spread through those type of membranes.
Right. And I think a follow-up to that is someone wants to know about putting the mask in the microwave for 60 seconds. Would that help to kill?
I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know.
Yeah.
Well, some of the masks have metal on them, like the clip, the nose clip or something. So you'll be.
That's true. But right. I think my assumption is they're talking about the paper masks. I do know there's a company that has a way of sterilizing them, and that's something that's being started in hospitals, but I don't know about the microwave, putting it in a microwave. I can't comment either way.
Right. It might be, you know, a good idea. I've seen on social media where people are like an old cloth or shirt or whatever and making it into a mask. And then you can wash it, you know, if you don't have mask. People are being very creative. Lois says the urgent care where she was tested, the doctor said that there had yet to be a negative test. That gave her the impression that the test they were using would not be effective. Could this be the case? That they were, if everybody's testing, then the test is wrong.
Yeah, I can't say, but I would think that in this climate, I would take a positive test seriously. Mm-hmm. I find in my practice, and this is what I share with my patients, it's COVID. I mean, the COVID testing is very helpful if it's positive, but not so helpful if it's negative. Meaning that some people out there have false negatives. Mm-hmm. And I have not seen false positives yet.
Wow.
That's not to say they don't exist. I'm just telling you from my experience, I haven't seen it.
Again, if you're listening via phone, if you've called in and you'd like to ask the doctor a question on your own, you can just press 1 on your phone, and I will know then that you have a question for the doctor. There are still people lined up on the phone. However, none of them have, no more of them have pressed 1. So we'll continue to take the calls, the comments. And for Monique Johnson, that number, again, is 347-996-5394. Someone wants to know if we should be using vitamin C.
There were some reports in China that vitamin C is helpful. I haven't seen that same literature here in the States, but my philosophy is it can't hurt.
True.
But I haven't seen any, if you ask me again, evidence-based, I haven't seen evidence-based here in the United States saying that vitamin C makes a difference.
And vitamin D, I didn't see that. Before, but vitamin D is,
Yeah, but I don't think vitamin C can hurt. So if you have it and it gives you comfort, take it.
Is the goal to have everyone tested for COVID-19?
I think ultimately it would be important to test as many people as possible, starting with people who are symptomatic, as well as people who have been exposed to people who are symptomatic, and then maybe then scale to people who have not had symptoms but have had exposure. I think ideally, you want to do that. Like some countries, they actually do tracking, meaning contact tracking. If somebody's positive, then they go to everybody that they can figure out that person has contacted, and then they test them. And if you think about branches of a tree, and then that's how it scales out. I think that was the model of South Korea. We're not doing that here, and I think that's because of the limitation, a lot of reasons why it's not happening here. But some of the other countries, that's how they've done it, and that's how they've been able to decrease the numbers.
It's a lot, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a lot to digest, and it's like as well, I was talking to Therese earlier. It's surreal, and just getting used to, you know, one thing that I've learned about this is just how interconnected so many things are that you never really thought about before.
Hmm. What are some of your observations there?
For instance, even in the hospital, things that you never thought about before, a need for respirators. And then people on respirators need medication, and then they're running short on the medication. Nurses need pumps to give medications, you know, the IV pumps. And some hospitals are running out of IV pumps, or they have a short. Those kind of things you just never really think about from a medical perspective.
Hmm. Yeah, I haven't heard too many people talk about the IV pumps, but those are necessary.
Yeah, I saw a nurse on television, I think it was last week, mentioning that at her hospital, that they were really tight on IV pumps and it's something. And even like I said, when people are on a respirator, they need medications to sedate them. And I understand that there was a shortage of the meds at some hospitals.
Okay, someone just pressed one. We'll take a call. What's your name and where you calling from? Last four digits, 5804.
Hi, this is Monique. I wanted to first say thank you for allowing this type of forum. There's a lot of questions I think that we have, a lot of us have. But before I started my questioning to the doctor, Cheryl.
Questioning? She's not on trial.
Monique Johnson?
This is Monique. Go ahead. Yes, Monique. So what's your question, hon?
Okay. My question, the doctor spoke about weathering and the pre-aging. Can you hear me?
Right. Yes, we can hear you. Yeah. Go ahead.
So in regards to the word, she used the word I'd never heard before, weathering, in regards to premature aging in Black people, over worrying. That was one of the things I would like for her to reiterate on.
Yeah, and it was something that was new to me also. When I was preparing for this talk, I was reading from a number of different sources, and one of the things that I read used that term weathering, and I was fascinated by it, and particularly when I read what the author meant by it. And I'll just reiterate it. The term referred to accelerated aging due to stressors, exposure to toxins, lack of sleep, and racial discrimination. And it just makes sense. But I had never heard the term before either, but I thought it was important to mention it here.
Mm-hmm. We could start a whole new forum just on that particular word. I think all of us are going to be looking into that. I had another question regarding the tiger in the Bronx Zoo. Initially, they had said that it could not go over to animals. So my question is, in your opinion, do you feel that the virus has mutated? And that's why the animals, they said felines in particular, can get it?
Not necessarily. Again, we're learning about this virus. So I don't think you could necessarily say it mutated. I could just say that our learning curve increased.
And then, okay, my last question I think is on everybody's mind, especially mine. Realistically, understanding in what you already know and how contagious the virus is, what is a realistic timeline? I know a lot of people saying next month, 2 weeks. Do you think it, in your opinion, based on what you know, that it's realistic that the mass majority go back to business as usual in the next month?
I don't think we know, and I don't think that question can be answered until we have more testing done.
So, in your opinion, more testing done over what amount of time? Because I'm still seeing 700 deaths.
And know where the virus is, but I don't think that question can really be answered.
Okay, can you answer at what point of the curve do you think it's safe at 700 deaths a day? At what point do you think it's something where we shouldn't be as concerned? Maybe only 100 deaths, only 50 deaths, or do you, in your opinion, do you think we need to go all the way down to zero?
I don't think you necessarily need to go down to zero, but I think just even to use the governor's terms, the things you want to see is decreased hospitalizations, decreased ICU admissions, and decrease people testing positive. You want to see those things.
Okay,
and the other thing
you.
What I would tell you, I would, you know, hopefully this does, we do see a decline over the summer, but if you've been watching the news, they've been predicting that you might see a dip, but then a resurgence. And then if you look at some of the other countries that have relaxed some of the restrictions, they are seeing it. I think that the best hope for us is a vaccine.
Hmm. Right. Yeah, that was my last thing. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. We have one more caller, and then we have about 10 minutes to try to get through the rest of the comments. People have been writing a lot of comments. The last four digits of your number is 0650. What's your name and
yes.
where are you calling from?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, my name is Tanya. Hi, Dr. Cheryl. My question is there any indication on how long a person can spread the disease once they've been exposed to it? You're telling
us
the quarantine for 14 days.
The incubation period that they're recommending currently is 14 days. The virus incubation period, the most common time people develop symptoms is at day 5 post-exposure. But most people, if they're going to develop symptoms, they occur at the 14th day mark, which is why they're recommending that.
Okay. And there is no data to state whether it will last longer where they can spread it as of yet.
I can just tell you about the quarantine. Probably the best answer to that, if a person's been exposed and they have access to testing, is to get that done. But if not, what's recommended now is the 14-day quarantine. But I think to definitively answer your question is if that person can be tested. Some states, believe it or not, are testing people who don't have symptoms. Our area
doesn't
have
testing
capacity to do that, but there are some states that do.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you so much for taking the time out to do this. It's very important for the community.
Yes.
You're welcome.
And thank you. Thank you for calling in. I want to ask everybody to please subscribe to the YouTube page. If you're looking, if you're watching, subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Hit the subscribe button. If you listened or by phone on Blog Talk Radio, follow us. If you are watching us live on our Facebook page, In the Basement with Javon and Therese, hit the button. I mean, support, because our only desire is to support and educate you and entertain you. That's what we do. It's all about you. It's all about you. And Dr. Thomas, I can't tell you how many people have made comments such as, thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Thomas, for taking this time to do this. And you know, people are very, very appreciative and feel like they've learned a lot tonight. Someone,
thank you for having me and allowing me to.
Someone says, I truly appreciate you taking out time out of your busy schedule to educate and warn us on exactly what's going on. This was very informative to me. Thank you also very much. But thank you especially. Patricia Porter says, very informative, Dr. Thomas. Thank you. Someone else wanted to chime in for those of us in New Jersey that Somerset is now doing testing somewhere. So that's good to know. And somebody says, thank you for this wonderful information. I don't know if the information is wonderful, but I think it's wonderful that she's sharing it. This is it's not like, woohoo, the cure is here. No, it's just not wonderful information, but we're glad to have
it. Some of the things that I mentioned that we can do, people will take to heart and remember, taking control of your health, voting, doing the census, voting for people who share your interests and are going to be willing to work for your interests. So hopefully those things will stick.
Absolutely, absolutely.
In addition to taking care of yourself.
Are you still seeing patients? Someone's asking, how are you?
Yeah, I am. I see patients in the office, but I'm also doing a lot of telemedicine, which is like this, but with medicine.
Nice. Excellent.
So thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Before you go, there was one last thing someone had I have someone in my circle who keeps talking about what, the 5G tower, and I refuse to listen to what he's saying. He is someone who is completely dismissing the seriousness of COVID-19. Well, yeah, don't listen to him. But somebody was talking about the air in the ventilators killing people. Like, have you heard anything about there being too much pressure from the ventilator on already damaged lungs that are causing deaths? And
I haven't heard that as a widespread problem. I don't know if somebody knows of an isolated situation, which again I can't comment on, but I haven't heard that as a widespread problem. But I can tell you that if a person has the inflammatory lung problem from the virus that I mentioned, it's very difficult to treat. And that's separate from COVID. Historically, it's very difficult to treat. But people are surviving, and hopefully that more will. People are making it off the vent.
Okay, one more person slipped in and pressed one. So we're going to let this one last question. 7571, are the last four digits of your number. Turn down the radio.
Turn down the radio.
Volume on whatever you're listening to us on, please. 7571, what's your name and where are you calling from? Hello?
Hello?
What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello?
Hello?
Okay, I'm just hearing myself. I tried 7571. With that, doctor, oh, wait, hold on. There's another comment. Let's just see. Very impressive. They're all impressed with you. Now, look, get an appointment. I can't. You know?
And yes, you can do telemedicine long distance. It's over the computer. So yes, Cynthia, sit. You can.
Yeah. Everybody's trying to take my doctor away. Okay, time for you to go, doctor. Everybody wants you to be your doctor now. No, this is my doctor. I can share her though, because I want you all to be healthy. And please tell everyone where your website, so that people can look you up, and if they are in the general area, maybe they might want to try to have a visit with you.
Okay, it's awllc18.com, and that stands for Advancing Wellness LLC. Always to advance wellness amongst my patients.
This is your private practice, right? Teresa had asked me that earlier.
Yes.
And I was like, I don't know. I never see another doctor there. It's just me and her. I don't see anybody else. It's like a Chaka Khan concert. You only see Chaka Khan. You don't look around if there's other artists. What is it? I'm there for you, doc. Oh, Lord. Here's another one last question. Gee whiz. See how they slip in there? What do you say to a millennial? You say nothing to millennials. No, what do you say? I'm just teasing. What do you say to a millennial who has all the symptoms but refuses to get tested because they are preaching that they can't get COVID-19? They say everyone is paranoid and won't wear a mask.
I think Lois answered that question right underneath the...
Yeah.
Brand to go enjoy living somewhere else.
With your mask, right?
Right, right. Repeat your website one more time, Doc.
awllc18.com.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate having you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night. You're welcome.
This was fabulous. This was absolutely fabulous. And I want to thank everybody for listening, for joining in. And, you know, everybody, just please stay home, take care of yourselves. And
and for those of you who don't know, as of April 1st, you may want to check your benefit package for those of you who are still working, because there is an extension for sick leave if you've been affected or caring for someone with COVID. Please check that out, because a lot of what I've understood is a lot of employers are not sharing that with their staff. So if you are caring for someone, or you are recovering or caught COVID, please know that you have extended sick time. And they just did that on April 1st. And keep checking your benefit packages and check with your local stay ordinances, because there's always new information coming in with trying to make sure wellness. It's paid sick time. So it's not like you out and you don't get paid. It's paid sick time. Just wanted to add that.
Thank you, Rez. That was great. That was great. Great, great. So paid sick time, everybody. Oh, gee. Everybody, what else did I want? Oh, we wanted to tell you, make sure that you check us out this coming Saturday.
Yeah.
Rez, you want to tell them who's coming on Saturday?
For all y'all that, you know, you like sexy little heartthrobs, actor Leon will be joining us this Saturday. We're going to get all up and through his business real fast.
Yes, yes. You know, his publicist sent a couple of pictures, and can I just tell you, the man was smoldering. I'm like, how in the hell? That's my one question for him. So if y'all like the five heartbeats and what's the other one? What's that? The waiting to exhale? You know, Leon, man. My question is, how do you turn on the smolder? Because since I'm in the house, I want to smolder.
Well, we're going to ask him. I'm not interested in his kind of smoldering, but we're going to ask him anyway.
I want to learn how to do it. I want to learn how to smolder.
You want to learn how to smolder?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to smolder like Leon. He does it like just because, like smolder. You know, I want to smolder.
We have to practice it.
Oh, the man is the king of smoldering. Anyway, everybody, that's Leon on Brunch in the Basement with Javon and Therese. Make sure you subscribe, follow us, and you too may learn. Have a good night, everybody. See you Saturday.
Thank you.
God has smiled on me, he has set me free. Oh, 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 God has smiled on me, he's been good to me. So as I begin to
Christ, that I never left your side. I've been right here all along, so you can dry your eyes. Speak at me like I knew you would. Pray to me like you know you could. That's when I realized that he's so good. My God is good. He's been good to me.
Good night, everybody. Therese, it looks like you ain't ready to go. You want to play music or something? Is that what it is? You want to give them like 20 minutes of music? Is that what you want to do? Or is it that?
I'm not ever going to say no to music. I'm not ever going to say no to music.
I think for the people that's still kind of hanging out, we should give them like just a couple of little songs. You think?
Yeah, why not?
Now, the thing is, though, it's got to be particular songs because we are actually broadcasting in a particular way.
Okay.
Because I wanted to try something new tonight just to see, you know, how deep in it we are.
Okay.
And we can discuss all of that. But.
Hey, Nene.
Yeah, shout out all your peeps, Rez. You got a lot of people on this, you know, who kind of watched this broadcast. Please shout out your people while I look for something, you know, to play.
Okay. Pops says some Shaka. You know, Shaka's always in the building. Shout out to Debbie and Shaniqua Turner, of course. I'm going to start. Hey to Keith Anthony Fluitt. He says this song is just what his soul needed, Javon. So good looking. Shout out to Kat Cadillac. I see you on. And Lulu, I see you there too. Pop, of course, and Laverne and Sonia. It's so many folks that just Monique and Pete Boogie. So many people joined in tonight to talk to the doctor, which I'm absolutely proud of because we, you know, we just try to, we're at the pulse of the people a lot of times. And with this information that we got tonight was just, you know, helpful because so many people are really, if not grieving, they're suffering and, you know, anxious and just, you know. I can say one thing that's helped me a lot is in this time is to take my moments in tranquility, like solitude, get up and just kind of practice stillness. And it's not a big regime, it's not a whole, it's just sitting still and quiet and just allowing yourself to relax in that moment or going into a very quiet space and pray, do some prayer, you know, talking it out, you know. So, and whatever the God is of your understanding, you know, just commune and really center yourself and pray for people that are not doing well and, you know, that sort of thing that really keeps you lifted. And then I sprinkle that with music and anything that brings me joy, because it's important to know what brings you joy at a time like this and do it, you know. So many devices right now. I got FaceTime and House Party and Zoom and all kinds of things, because we've realized now more than ever that we kind of need social interaction. You know, you need to see somebody's face. When somebody pops up on the Zoom screen I haven't seen in a minute and they're like, hey, Therese, I'm like, oh man, you know, we can really ask. There's no more rhetorical questions. You can really ask how somebody's doing and then wait to hear the answer. It's, you know, people are telling you how they're doing. you know, no more rhetorical questions, you know. But that's just me. And everybody who's listening, please share. Share this on your Facebook pages. Share it with someone, you know, as we move and progress, because the YouTube streaming is just something we started doing. But, you know, we're across all platforms, and we're also broadcasting internationally. So we have a large audience there as well. So please share it, you know, call in, support. Do what you can, because it's necessary that we all have a voice and something that we can bring the people at this time.
That and Therese is pretty.
Oh, man. And, you know, another piece is that you can get on, you know, like, this is a keep it real kind of show. And there have been mornings, like normally we broadcast on Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Saturday. So if you're up and around on a Saturday, you know, just tune us in, check us out, see what we got going on.